It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey guys, Rick here from the Mobile Hunter Podcast, and I'm here to tell you about one of our sponsors, Saddy's LLC, Custom Ammunition and Gunworks. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads that have been putting down deer, waterfowl, and turkey all year long. The Saddy's Fatty, the turkey load that we use, can stop a bird dead in its tracks. Check them out at SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com. Or on Facebook at SattiesLLC and tell them the Mobile Hunter Podcast sent you.
Welcome to the Mobile Hunter Podcast. Our mission is simple. We want to help you become a better hunter. We believe that mobility kills and efficiency will set you free.
Welcome to the Mobile Hunter Podcast and another episode of Anatomy of a Miss. Tonight's guest is Jacob Sklenner. You've heard him on our podcast. If you go back and listen to the episode Monster in the Marsh, and most recently, I believe you did a thermals podcast with both Chris and Josh, correct?
Yeah, that podcast was awesome. A good old-fashioned nerd session that we've actually got a lot of good feedback from that, which is cool to hear.
People, yeah, like it. I was really enamored with everything you guys were talking about on there. Like it's just one of those ones that you, like when you're looking for content to do a deep dive on something, that's one of those ones that I'll be referring people back to over and over and over again, because it's so great to have like. You, Josh, and Chris are at a lot higher level on that stuff than I am. I know that, but it's great to hear it from guys that I know personally, so I can ask questions later on too.
Yeah, I mean, we, and another thing too is like we welcome all questions with that as well. So, this is all information that we've retained through actual our own researching, and then. Podcasts, of course, too. So this asking questions and hearing it and honestly listening to it multiple times, which is what I've done to try and understand what I do now. I think that's the way that you learn best too. So if anyone's out there and they're like, should I send a message? Should I not? We would absolutely love it if you did. We'd love to hear that you liked it, and we'd love to help you have the understanding that we've gotten to benefit from now in these past few seasons.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when I ask somebody to come on and do this podcast, this version of the podcast, it's I love sitting down and talking with guys who are high level killers. And we talk about a moment that sticks out in their mind that is prominent, that is stuck with them. And we're going to, you know, the past couple guys I've talked to on here kind of are like, yeah, when you get the call from you, like, it's great that you get to be on the podcast. It sucks because you got to talk about something that's painful. Yeah. But the way that I look at it also is that it's a very good learning experience for our audience to know and understand what goes through the mind of guys who consistently kill big deer and who know what they're talking about. And it brings everyone kind of, not back down to the same level, but it brings everybody back to a sense of like, hey, like these guys go through things just like me. And that's a very important thing as whether you're, you know, a seasoned hunter or a new hunter and you're just getting into the field. So I really appreciate you sitting down and doing this with me tonight, man.
Well, thank you, man. It's an honor to be on here. And I try to represent myself in the most organic, natural way, and missing and failure is the most essential thing, I think, to eventually succeeding. So this is the way that I want people to hear me, whether it sucks for me to not look invincible or not, man. This is real. This is what hunting really is. So it's an honor to be awesome. able to share that perspective with you.
Well, I appreciate that. So, well, let's dive right into it. Let's start with the miss. So, Jacob, if you could tell our audience the year, date, and season that the miss occurred.
So we've got two misses we'll talk about here, and they happened mm-hmm. this season. It was it's September 3rd of 2023. This was a hit, but basically a miss, just to skim the deer. And then September 5th of 2023, that was a full-blown miss. And we'll dive into the nature of those.
Yeah. So let's kind of go down the road here. So let's start September 3rd. So where were you hunting at? Was this public, private? Where... You know, was this a trip out of state? I mean, you're from Wisconsin, so I imagine that this was a trip out of state, correct?
Yeah. So this was a early season hunt in Nebraska. And this was one I did with the Hunting Beast crew, part of the Battle of the Bows series. And this was way out in Nebraska, 100-degree weather, a lot different than what I'm used to. And each of these happened on the ground and some different scenarios that I've ever been a part of. And I tried, like, hell to practice them, really, but there's only so much you can do to replicate scenarios you face when you're spot and stalk kind of hunting.
Absolutely. So was this your first spot and stalk style hunt, or had you done these previously?
So this was my first spot and stalk style hunt. I have been scouting my way through the woods with a bow and seen a deer and tried stalking up on it and gotten close to it in the past, but this was the first true with the intention of spotting a deer and going in and stalking it style hunt. And the beginning of this trip, I was trying to do a lot of tree stand hunting and stuff like that. And I found that it wasn't cutting it. And I found that I actually had the opportunity in some of these areas of Nebraska to spot and stalk. And I just thought I had some misconceptions about how I was going to get it done. I had put a lot of stock into what I initially thought of these areas. And I had to take a step back and seeing that I wasn't succeeding in those ways, and found that I needed to go just give up a morning and observe. And that's when I started really getting on deer. This first hunt, I sat in a tree stand at the beginning of the hunt, and I actually got down from my stand early because I had seen deer go into a bedding area that not come out. And I saw multiple deer that day that actually replicated the patterns I was observing in the morning. And the afternoon, few of them didn't do that, so I was trying to figure out where the heck they had gone and how they had slipped through the cracks, and that's what led to my first opportunity.
Okay, so let's discuss that. So you like most, I feel like Midwesterners, Wisconsin's Midwest. That's a safe thing to say. Yeah, like most Midwesterners, hunt from a tree stand, saddle, platform, whatever, mobile hunting that we're normally used to is, and then you go to a more Western style of hunting, and it's very different. I've never been on a spot and stalk hunt other than kind of what you said, where you're kind of creeping through the woods and you come upon a deer or you have an opportunity. But for you during this hunt, you had your first opportunity, you said, on that was September 3rd, correct?
Yep. So I had gotten there early, season open September 1st, done a lot of walking in extremely hot weather, more than I really should have, and just kind of cut my teeth on it and finally decided to branch out to that more spotting kind of hunting, and spent the morning of September 3rd spotting in a river bottom, and then tried to take advantage of the observations I had and hunted in a tree stand in that river bottom in the afternoon. I had observed a doe and a fawn, a mule deer doe and fawn, and another white tail fawn in that river bottom. And they both entered a specific cut of woods or exited it and then bedded down. And when I went in there to hunt in the afternoon, I watched the white tail fawn, the spotted fawn, replicate mm-hmm. that exact pattern. But I didn't see the mule deer doe and her yearling come back from where I had last lost sight of them. And so I was very glad that I did some observation because I got to learn a lot from that observation. But I knew that this sitting in the stand wasn't really going to be the way I was going to cash in on it. And I got out of the stand. I actually went to backtrack that mule deer doe and her yearling.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that they had vacated their beds and I had missed it somehow. And I progressed a bit past there and I was keeping my arrow knocked. I kept my GoPro on my head. And I got just past that bed, maybe a few yards past. I rounded a tree and coming out of a bed, actually, on a very steep hillside above me was a buck. And I thought it was a mule deer at first. I do believe in hindsight it was a whitetail. But
okay,
it was a whitetail buck on the ears. It's pretty much what I saw. And he was just staring at me right as I rounded this corner. So quick turn the GoPro on, got to full draw. And I had to guess the yardage. Well, it was awkward. It was uphill in grass. I couldn't mm-hmm. see the deer's feet, which is, come to find out, a very, very difficult kind of thing to do is judge range, especially when you can't with a rangefinder. You can't, you know, I can't range find that deer and then hope to get a shot.
Right.
And I judged him at about 40 yards, and I let the shot loose, and I stood in place and ranged that spot afterward and found that I had guessed wrong. I had guessed much longer than what it really was.
Really? How long was it after you ranged it?
I think it was like 33 yards or something like that with what I had. And I think I put the 40 pin a little bit low, but I'm shooting a heavier arrow.
Okay.
I'm shooting a 540 grain total. And so I didn't have the I don't still, but I didn't have the money to just buy a whole new arrow setup and get my bow tuned to that and then tune it back to my whitetail setup. So I didn't do that. I did a lot of practice to prep for this, really. I mean, I shot and practiced out to 60 yards every day over and over again. I practiced all the intermediate ranges, so I'm not just honing in on one thing. But, I mean, I was shooting softball-sized groups at 60, like
wow,
okay. picking up the bow off the ground. And I put my max range at about 50 for this trip, like perfect conditions. I put my max range at 50. So I figured if I go 10 yards in from what I'm able to shoot consistently, that's what I will do in the wild. And that's with practicing, doing like, sometimes I would do like 3 to 5 mile runs and then I would come pick up my bow and make sure I'm shooting consistently. The second I'm done with that run, like I'm not taking time to break or grab water. I'm immediately shooting my bow, like putting my mm-hmm. body under stress. I'm holding my draw as long as humanly possible. And then when I feel like my arms are about to give out, refocusing and centering up and executing a good shot. And I brought a Butter Morel cube target and I was throwing that out at random ranges. And all of that was great preparation and just guessing the range, holding for a long time, all the things that you'd think you got to do out west.
Mm-hmm,
But I didn't understand how different it gets when you don't have a frame of reference on where the ground is. And so with that deer uphill, it's not even safe to practice shooting uphill around here. Like there's a reason they don't have that at ranges. But with that steep of a hill, I had complete coverage behind him. I wasn't sending the arrow into oblivion. And so it was an ethical shot I could take at the time, but it was not something I realistically had practiced. And there's a lot of different things with, come to find out, there's a lot of different things with the mechanics of your shot that get influenced when you're actually shooting uphill, let alone misjudging the range on top of it, made it a lot more difficult.
Well, yeah, and I think, I can't remember if it was Chris or Jacob Emery who I was talking to, it might have been both of them, honestly, where we've discussed where you can't see the yardage, you can't see the ground in between there and your target, and it throws off the yardage so much. It was Chris on his first miss of the season this past season where he believed it to be one thing, but because he couldn't see the ground in between himself and the animal that he judged it incorrectly. So you put the 40 pin on him mm-hmm. and you've given us kind of the idea and how you prepped, how you took time. And I love what you said too, like, you do intermediate ranges. You do all the different stuff. I love the idea of throwing the cube target out there and just guess in like getting the range and then or making your best guess and then taking the shot, because I think that that helps identify a lot more. It gives you better depth perception on what your, you know, where your target's at a regular basis. So you do all this, you're doing this all the way up until this hunt, and it comes up to the moment and you loose the arrow. So what happens in your mind, or what are you telling yourself when you've got the 40 pin on it and you loose that arrow?
So I'm not one of these like Joel Turner shot IQ guys. Like I'm one of those guys that if I get so much in my head, I will psych myself out and I'll start making mistakes because I'll put too much thought into each piece. But I do have a routine with all that being said. I do have a routine. And I always think I remind myself of how hard I worked to get this moment. I remind myself that I've executed this very skill thousands of times, even in just the year before. You know, and I get to that moment and I tell myself to breathe, focus, and squeeze. So I breathe, I relax, I focus, I make sure I'm holding the pin where I want to, I'm letting it float a tiny bit, and I'm squeezing that arrow off and I'm following through. And then what I'm really paying attention to is everything I can possibly observe. So I'm thinking about, I'm dead silent for the moments after the shot, looking at the deer's demeanor as it goes off, focusing on what that sound is like, thinking right away of an analogy for the sound, like a balloon popping underwater is one I've used, or like hitting a pumpkin, or like
hitting a pumpkin. Yeah.
Yeah. There's stuff like if you imagine hitting a piece of tag board, like that's a different sound, or hitting a 2x4, like all those are different sounds, different kinds of hits. Well, I'm not going to remember that sound perfectly every time, but I'm going to remember what I thought it sounded like right away. So if I tell myself like, oh, that was hitting a pumpkin right there, like that's right what I wanted to hear, then that's what I can tell myself over again. But I'm not going to like, do I say it was like a thwack, but not like a hard thwack? Like, you know, that's really hard to reiterate, but
it is.
So I do that. I think of where the deer went, where I last saw it disappear, what its demeanor was like, if its tail was up. And so I think of all that stuff. And honestly, what I thought right away is because I settled my pin and I executed correctly, I didn't jerk to either side when I followed through, I thought I just perfect shot. Like I thought it was a perfect shot. And in hindsight, I'm assuming left and right was perfect. But yeah, it was just high. It made a sound like it hit the deer. You know, now I think maybe, you know, was it hitting a yucca plant? I really do think it hit the deer through the backstrap and caught fat and cleaned the arrow off really good. And then he just wasn't bleeding because it went through his backstrap. But man, I was just, even after seeing that the GoPro footage wasn't clear enough to see the actual arrow hit the deer, it was clear enough to see pretty much everything except for the arrow hitting the deer. That in my mind was like, man, I've had deer get shot with these fixed blades and not, you know, open up blood right away. So like, you know, I could go back in and find this. And, you know, after that shot, I went, saw the arrow. There was no blood on it or anything. I couldn't find anything. I had no signal. It was just a mess. There were coyotes going off everywhere. I saw a mountain lion earlier that day. It was just,
oh geez.
Yeah. So like all this stuff's running through my head and I'm like, I don't really want to be walking around where I don't have signal. An hour and a half from camp and everyone else is 3 hours in the opposite direction from camp. So I'm like a 4 to 5 hour drive from where everyone is right now. Like I'm not going to do this, but in my mind I was like, the deer's dead. Like I executed a good shot. And I didn't really understand that, with that heavy of a setup, how big of a difference that makes specifically aiming uphill. I think
so. Say more about that. Like, cause I mean, you're talking to somebody who, you know, as everyone who's listened to this previously, I am just like, archery is just over my head. Arrow setups, all that. I defer to Chris on everything. And I ask him what I feel like are stupid questions all the time. So explain a little bit, in terms of like what you know now versus what you knew then.
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic point. So I actually talked to Ethan Eskew on the way there, and he was like, dude, you got to get a lighter setup. He's like, this is going to happen to you. And I was like, I know, I should have, I can't, I wish I could have. And it bit me, and he was 100% right, and I'll give him credit for that till the end of time. But basically, having a 540 setup, 540 grain setup, like your pin gap's rather large. So when you aim at 40 yards and it's really at 30, you are much further off. You're a few extra inches of height different than if you were to have a lighter arrow with a tighter pin gap, so your pins look closer together in your sight. You have a larger room for error if you have a shorter gap between your pins.
Okay.
So if I was shooting a setup that a lot of guys out west that are shooting like antelope, let's say, do, because you know they're highly varying ranges, stuff like that. They're shooting around 400, light 400 grains, like maybe 440 to anywhere from to 380 or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where they're sitting. I know guys that shoot even lighter than that on top of it, but you got a lot more room for error. They can have their, some of them will have setups where their 20 pin will kill a deer at eight, anywhere from 8 to 32 yards, you know, like,
wow.
Yeah. So it'll be just a couple inches off in those ranges. And so a lot of people, and that's a pretty smart setup, but I don't really have that problem when I'm a tree stand hunter and I can range all my trees beforehand that he might come by, and you know, there's not really a mistake to make in that case if you prepare well in a whitetail situation in a tree stand. But yeah, that, and then the other thing too is shooting uphill, I learned that it's not a factor of like gravity or you're propelling it against gravity or anything like that, because it's a constant, but it's the way that it's hard to explain in a podcast, but it's kind of like my body mechanics, the way my body's tilted. It causes the heel of my left hand, the hand that's on the rest, like on my bow itself, mm-hmm. to kind of finish high. I don't know if that makes sense, but it kind of pushes the bow with the heel of my hand up rather than allowing the bow to just naturally fall, because my natural instinct was to almost catch the bow as I'm almost underneath it. And this is an extreme angle up. Like when I went up this ridge to get to this deer, I had to get on my hands to do it. Like it was a very, very steep hill. And I actually found that this deer was only 20 yards out of his bed when I actually ended up shooting him. Cause I went to stop and try to get signal way uphill, and I actually stopped in his bed. But, those are the things that I didn't really consider is how your momentum of your finish changes depending on the angle you're at. I'm very used to it downhill, obviously as a tree stand hunter, but I didn't realize how different it is uphill. And I, in the future, will be paying a lot more attention to my arrow setup, in situations where I cannot get an accurate judgment of range.
Okay. So after this happens, and like you said, you're kind of going through everything. Were you at the time immediately after the shot, were you blaming yourself or were you blaming the equipment at that time?
Yeah. So like immediately after, I was like, I still thought I killed him. But I did just a ridiculous amount of grid searching the next day. Like I grid searched every piece of land possible. It was way more effort than the rest of the guys at camp really thought I should have gone through, to be honest. But I blame myself entirely. Like, to me, it's like, if my equipment failed me, it's because I didn't inspect it well enough to understand how it was going to act in that situation. You know, this was something I felt as though I wasn't going to be able to realistically prepare for. But I felt like the reason my equipment may not have been as suited is because I allowed it to be in this case. And the reason that I failed in an uphill shot is because I hadn't practiced it. And maybe I should find a little tiny way to kind of feel that out beforehand or just anything like that. So I don't ever want to place blame on anything but myself, because that means I can't mm-hmm. solve it. And if I can place blame on myself, I can just get over my ego, then I can just get to solving it and get to being better for the next go around. And so immediately it was like, hey, like God gave me this amazing opportunity at an animal, my first out of state trip ever, and I screwed it up. And I'm ridiculously blessed to have that example, but now a deer may potentially be injured because of me. And I didn't find any blood, so I think that deer is completely fine. But yeah, I completely wear it on the chest there, or take it on the chin there. It's That one was on me.
Okay. So ultimately, this is still like what, day two, three of the trip? Yeah.
So that's day three. I spent the whole morning of that day, of the day after, because it was an afternoon hunt, got dark. I spent the whole morning up until like 11 or 1 or just pretty long time. Grid searching, I was absolutely exhausted. I was running on no sleep, and I slept off that afternoon. So we're done with day four by the time I can get a next hunt out. And I was determined as ever. I wasn't one to kind of sit back in a corner and be pissed. I was determined to take what I had left of this trip and get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, Rick here from the Mobile Hunter Podcast, and I'm here to tell you about one of our sponsors, Saddy's LLC, Custom Ammunition and Gun Works. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads that have been putting down deer, waterfowl, and turkey all year long. The Saddy's Fatty, the turkey load that we use, can stop a bird dead in its tracks. Check them out at SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com. Or on Facebook at Satties LLC and tell them the Mobile Hunter Podcast sent you.
Good. So that kind of answers the next couple of questions. And so it didn't ruin the hunt for you, it doesn't sound like, because you had kind of already made the mindset of like, I know, like, I can see what I did here at some level, but I've still got time left. So course correction for you was figuring out, just like you did earlier on in the trip, you course corrected from being in the tree stand to doing a spot and stalk hunt, and then course correct after missing this deer, you say to yourself, okay, this is what I have to do differently in my next opportunity when I get one. Now at that point, like you said, you're not feeling sorry for yourself or anything like that. Were you convinced that you knew what you needed to do in order to get back on deer at that point? Or was it one of those things where some level of anxiety starts setting in because it's like, we're getting into the later part of the trip. Like, I messed up a shot. Do you begin questioning yourself and, you know, the situation at that point?
Yeah. So, anxiety hit me for sure. I had never been, obviously, like I said, it's my first out-of-state whitetail trip at this point, and I had not been in terrain like Nebraska on a hunt before. And so I was like, man, I finally figured out this little area, and now I just grid searched every goddamn step of it. Like, I just destroyed it. And so, and like, as if the mountain lion wasn't enough, you know? So like, I just destroyed the little bit that I was sure of, and I was going to relocate to another area, and then I saw some guy come up, and he's like, you part of the hunt beast? He's like, I'm about to go in this little creek bottom here. I was like, oh, Jesus. Like, there it goes. It's a super nice guy, but I was like, there goes my plan B. And I was already on plan B, so there goes C, really. And so I was like, I need to find some, I know what worked for me, and it was observing. I need to find some way that I can get back to observing and get back to getting some certain form of information. I spent September, oh gosh, I think I'm getting my dates mixed up, but I think it was the 4th. I went to a marsh for a little bit. That was the afternoon hunt instead of sleeping it off. I think I actually went to a marsh in the afternoon, figured out that didn't work. Didn't line up really like what I thought it would be back home. The marshes were just drier. And when you have sand hills all around the marshes, it didn't really line up the same. So I guess instead of sleeping it off, I went out, I got there in the afternoon, and I'm calling it correctly. And before my afternoon hunts from then on too, I actually shot at that cube too, to make sure wasn't my equipment that was actually like a sight got bumped or something. So my bow was shooting correct still. But, the next morning, I was like, I'm going to relocate to this different property. And it was hours away from the closest thing I'd been to. But it set up where I had hills kind of in, I'll call it a cathedral type setting, but it was like a stadium basically, where the hills, the sand hills around it are elevated all around this marsh. And I was like, well, it's 105 degrees on average here. Like, I'm going to go observe a marsh because, like, where else are the deer going to want to be? And I can see dang near this whole thing from it, and I can see how the deer are actually using it because I don't think it's setting up the way they would back home. Mm-hmm. And so I got to this new property, and I went out in the dark. I'd never seen it or anything like that. I went in there in the dark and set up my spotting scope and sat on a ridge and saw a bunch of deer moving and just took everything I'd ever heard from Zach Fehrenbaugh straight into the mind and just scanned every single piece of cover imaginable. And that led me to, right as I was about to try and relocate to a different glassing point, really, in the later stretches of morning, I spotted a giant buck about a quarter mile away.
Really?
Slipping into a bedding area. And it wasn't like it would be back home where they're on tiny little pieces of isolated cover because the pressure gets to the edge. He was actually on the edge underneath a giant cottonwood tree. And I saw, and this buck, like, I mean, you know, the one I shot this year was good.
Yeah.
He was that size or bigger. Like, he was,
holy cow,
he
seriously,
was a freaking toad. Like, I was trying to be as modest as possible and say he was a 145, but I think he was bigger than that. And it's hard because the footage I have of him is a little tiny bit grainy. You can see him pretty good. You can see enough to know that he's a toad. But I spotted this deer with just his head poking up behind this cottonwood, and all of a sudden he like is shaking his head and just disappears behind it. And I can't see him at all where he went from there. But I was like, he's in a situation where I might, you know, get on him. And I was pissed off, mind you, because I had screwed up the opportunity before. So I'm telling myself, I'm going to kill this deer. Like, I'm absolutely going to kill this deer. It's happening today. And I was telling myself the whole way. I'm in my little baby hiking boots, like, walking now into this marsh. I have to cross the entirety of the thickness of this marsh to get to this deer. So I'm getting soaked. But I'm just tunnel vision, dude. I'm like, I'm getting right up into this deer, and I'm shooting him in his bed. I even said to the camera, I'm shooting this freaking deer in his bed today. And what I thought had happened is the second he tucked behind that cottonwood, I thought he just bedded down. So I was like, perfect. That's why I lost him. But I wasn't sure. So I crept up to the edge of this bedding area, and there's a couple trees. There's the super large cottonwood that I had last seen him behind, and there's a couple leaning over like willows slash cottonwoods to my left, with a big one being to my right. And I got a really, really, really strong wind, which allowed me to get close. It was like 20, 30 mile an hour winds blowing from my right to my left. So blowing from where I last saw him to this other little patch of trees, and I'm in between. So it's perfectly perpendicular to my travel direction, a crosswind, which is exactly what I want. I don't want to be upwind because they'll smell me. And I don't want to be downwind because he'll see me because he's looking downwind. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the approach I took. And I got to the point where I could see that cottonwood and I could see where he would be bedding when I crept onto the edge of this bedding area, and he wasn't there. And I was like, damn it. Like, this sucks. Like, he's not there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little bit of wild sunflower in front of me, and I was like, all right, I'm not going to allow this to screw up my shot. I got to creep through this because, you know, my arrow could deflect off this stuff and get through. So I get past that, and I can't see him at all. I can't see his rack or anything. And I'm like, shoot, well, I've got a day and a half left. Like, I've got the rest of this day and another day left. Like, I could sit here all day and wait for this deer and potentially waste an entire day. Or I could creep a little bit further, try to see if I see his rack, and then make a decision from there. And so I chose to creep a little bit further. And I got right up to the point where it was just about between the large cottonwood and the trees to my left. And I had spent probably 10 minutes on the edge of this island scanning every single piece of cover, just waiting to see him stand or move his head. And I just looked behind every little bush or tree that I thought he could be bedded behind, and I couldn't see him. Well, I'd get between these two trees, and I looked to my left, and those leaning willows slash cottonwoods that were to my left, he was bedded right there.
Oh, so man.
I am just on a just off wind that's extremely violent and turbulent, and I'm 4 yards from this deer bedded. Like,
oh my gosh.
I can see which ways his eyes are turning. I can see the little pieces of sinew in the bases of his antlers. I can see every little individual split on his left G2. I can see like everything about this deer. And so I use that little one, that tree that he's sitting behind as a barrier, and I get to full draw, and I can see his neck extremely clearly and his head up extremely clearly, but nothing below it. And so he's right there. I don't know which way his body's facing. I can't take a Hail Mary and risk it shooting through the grass and guessing where his body is. And I'm in this deep internal debate on if I shoot him in the neck. And I had thought this was such a done deal that I literally told myself I wasn't going to shoot him in the neck because, one, I was going to, wasn't very ethical in my opinion. There's a tiny bit of room for error. I mean, at 4 yards, it's pretty hard to screw up a shot like that. But I also thought, oh, I could definitely ruin this mount right now. Like, that's how guaranteed I thought this was. So I was like, hell yeah. Like, I'm just going to wait for him to stand. Like, I can hold draw for forever. I know I can. Like, I'm not worried about that. So I'm holding it for a little bit. And then probably 10 seconds in, that wind that's been violent and consistent, albeit a little bit turbulent, puts a little bit of gust right to him. And I'm like, oh no. And I could just feel it. And he starts like shaking his head, looking around everywhere. He's like panicking. But he can't pick out that I'm the thing that's right freaking next to him that he just got a little bit of a whiff of. And so I whistle just to try to get him to stand, because I know he's going to spook at this point, but I want him to try to make his eyes count rather than his nose, because, you know, if that sound is right next to him, he might just stand. Yeah. And he didn't buy it. I don't even know if he heard me, but he kept looking around, and then I think he just decided it was too sketchy and just bolted immediately straight. And I had my GoPro on this whole time, but he straight ran immediately from a dead, like, he raised his butt without me seeing, because it was a little bit tucked behind that tree, and just took off. Absolutely no shot, no nothing. So that's not a miss, but that's big ass failure number two. And I'm like, I just blew an opportunity on my first out of state deer. Now I blew an opportunity at 4 yards on the biggest deer I've ever seen while hunting. Like, biggest deer I've ever seen in range while hunting, I should say. Mm-hmm. And I just want to jump off a bridge. Like, it was, I felt miserable in that moment, dude.
I was going to say, I got to think that, like, this is the second opportunity that you've had, and it's just, like, I know I would feel just absolutely dejected at that point. Just like, what am I doing wrong here? Why does this, like it's happened twice, but like, why does this keep happening to me type thing?
Yeah.
So you'd course corrected. You had attempted, like, the exchange had already taken place in your head. Mm-hmm. Like you said, like, I don't want to shoot him in the neck because I don't want to mess the mount up. Mm-hmm. You lose the opportunity to harvest this animal because it's just like that. How long does it take you? Because you're still on a trip now. Mm-hmm. Like, does this take you longer to recover than the deer that you missed 2 days prior? Or like, or are you at a lower spot now than you were previously after loosing an arrow?
I think the low was much lower, but it lasted not quite as long. I think the thought of injuring an animal hurt me a lot more. And I still am affected by that. Like, I always remember where I was and exactly what happened every single time I've injured an animal, and I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
So that hurt me a lot more to have injured one. I'm very glad that I didn't make a dumb shot on that deer and didn't hurt it. But the low was insanely low. Like, I felt awful. I felt like, how could you screw up an opportunity? I never swear on camera. Like, unless I'm like super excited and I'm like, F yeah. Like, yeah. And you give you that every once in a while. I could not share this footage without bleeping some stuff out. Like, it was, it was bad, dude. But that's the emotion. Like, that's what I went through.
Yeah.
You know, I want people to understand the pain I'm going through as much as it sucks. But I ended up calling my dad, and I called my buddy Jake Bush, and I called a few other friends. I called my buddy Cam, and I explained what happened. And they all just said, sack up, get out there, go kill one. You know, they were like, I don't feel bad for you. Like, and I just kept, and the way I explained it to him was like, it was the coolest freaking hunt of my life. I mean, Rick, that was my first spot and stalk hunt ever. 4 yards from a 145 plus. Like, that's just, you know, like that deer had to be, in hindsight, that deer's 155 plus, because I do believe he's the same size, if not bigger, than the one I shot in Wisconsin.
I mean, but when, like, you look at that, that's like less than 2% of hunts. Like, like you're going as an out-of-state resident to a place you've never been to. You go to a piece of public, you think it all through, you figure it out. And not only do you get on one deer, you get on two deers, but the second deer is a absolute toad of a buck. And that's what, that's like, you know, being originally from Ohio, that's what guys would come there for. They're like, there's one hiding behind every tree. You just got to find them. And it's like, that's not the case. This is not reality a lot of the time. Yeah. And again, like we've talked about previously, like you have a very clear way of how you're going to do things. And it's, there's this scene. I don't know if you're familiar with Star Trek, but there's a scene that in The Next Generation where Jean-Luc Picard says, he goes, you can play the game right and you can still lose. And that's life. And like, that's these situations where like you did everything right. And it still was just like low, low, low.
Yeah. And so I did get all this on video. It's on my channel. And I close out the second video with everything I did right and everything I did wrong and how I learned from it. And honestly, just talking to my friends and family was like that mental check. That's like, dude, like, just get after it. Like, what do you have to lose at this point? You've had just such an amazing experience. You have a lot to be thankful for. Just freaking go out there and have more fun. Like, this has been a lot of fun. You know, I'm not going to be upset after a trip like that. That's one of the coolest experiences I've ever had in the outdoors. Like, it was the coolest hunt I've ever had and the saddest hunt I've ever had at the same time. Like, that's a lot to be thankful for, honestly.
And, oh, hell yeah, it is.
And I was like, and so I was pissed off right away. And I was like, I don't care. And I had to cut some of this out of the video because I wanted to do this, but I couldn't actually do it realistically. I was like, I don't care how freaking long it takes. Like, I'm going to go sit up on this ridge. I'm going to glass over. Like, I purposely went and I bumped all the areas that he could have been that were downwind, like where he bumped to. And I was like, all right, there's only so many more places he can be in this marsh. I'm going to sit up on this hill. I'm going to freaking observe this marsh until that deer comes out. And I did that for forever, but the wind got so violent that it was blowing sand into my eyes. And I was like crying a lot just from my eyes were tearing up from the wind. And I couldn't, like, my tripod kept falling over and I couldn't, like, realistically glass it. I was super dehydrated. I hadn't eaten anything. And I was like, all right, I'm going to make a terrible shot when it comes to this last opportunity if I force myself through this. So I went back to the truck, and while everyone like heads home midday, like I ate something, I slept for an hour in the truck, and I went back out there back to that glassing knob. The wind had calmed down by like 5 miles an hour and was getting calmer by the second. And I went back out on that glassing knob and glassed, and I was like, you know, I'm here to kill deer. I'm not here to sit and feel sorry for myself. I'm here to go kill deer. And again, every time I failed, I just got more and more motivated and more locked in. And then afternoon, I glassed downwind of there and it slowed down to maybe a 10, 12 mile an hour wind. And I had a big old nanny doe come out. And then I had it's a nice basket 8-point come out. You know, he's not a stud, but a deer that I would be really, really happy to shoot for my first buck out of state. And I even say in the video, like, I want to go after him for the experience. Like, I want to have this experience. I'm going to get redemption on my spot and stalk. Like, I'm going to go end this on a high note. And I put a tripod with a camera up on the hill, and I put my GoPro on, and I have footage of me stalking up on this deer from the hill and footage of me on my own POV with the GoPro in my head. And probably it took me like 30 minutes to get up to this deer, but I was just crawling through this wild sunflower. And I again was working with a crosswind. My wind is blowing left to right, and I'm going straight toward him, and I'm range finding everything on the way in. I'm like, if I if I can, like, I'll get some kind of marker, like one abnormally tall sunflower pod, just any little thing I can, because there's not much for trees, and I'm going to hopefully have a better feel for the range. So I get up within 10 yards of this deer, and he starts moving a little bit faster than I expected, and I swing to get on him, and he sees just a little bit of movement on the corner of his eye, and he blows and does this big loop, and he's trying to get downwind of me, and I recognize that. So I held my draw, and I waited for him to try and circle downwind. Well, now he's level ground in sunflower pods that are ending at about eye level for me.
And
so I got to shoot between these little, like, they're not sunflowers like you'd think for, like, the ones you would expect to get seeds out of, but they're just, you know, thin, wispy, wild sunflowers. And he works downwind, and right before he can get to my scent stream, he stops, and I judge him at, like, 33 yards, and I put my 30 pin, like, right on where I want, like, center mass of the lungs, and I watch it. I followed through perfectly. I'd been holding draw for about, like, a minute 15 at this point, and I watch it go perfectly, like, exactly 1 inch over the perfect spot laterally on his back. So it misses him, but it's, like, perfectly horizontally. Just I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if I cut a hair of his, but that would be the most damage I would have done. And so the deer spooks off, but he can't see me because I'm in sunflower up to my eyes and I'm barely moving at all. And so he takes a few bounds away, but then he's like, and he's 2.5, maybe 3.5 year old deer, because, you know, that area, they don't necessarily, the particular area we were in, they don't necessarily grow that big. The DNR said I'd be insane if I would have passed on this deer. And everywhere they say that, we've got insane pressure here and the deer are small. It's like, they're a good deer pretty much everywhere you go, but whatever. That's another point. So I know this deer was going to be naive and circle downwind. So I immediately drew again. I don't get to show this quite in the video, but I held draw for like another minute and 20 seconds. So at this minute 20 mark, he stopped, and I've got one sunflower pod like over his vitals. And I'm like saying to the camera, like, one more step, like, please just one more step. And I need him to come one more to clear that sunflower pod and I can shoot him, but I can't move my feet because he's staring straight at me. If I move too much, like, it's over. And so in my mind, I'm just getting like these flashbacks of, all right, I screwed up that first shot. Like, spent forever trying to find that deer. Like, I'm like, I got right up to that other one, blew the best opportunity of my life on the biggest buck I could. Like, just sailed a shot over his back. But I know he's at 20 yards now. Like, he stops right around the same area. I was like, I know exactly the range you're at. And I'm like, none of that matters. Like, we're going to zone in. We're going to make this happen. And instead of taking me about 10 seconds to beg him to go forward and realize I don't need to, I'm not going to get that shot. And so instead, I kind of like give a little bit of a lean back. I do a little bit of a limbo, and I put that pod on the other side of his vitals in front of his chest. And I just focused and kind of on my heels. Again, I had practiced off balance shots, just not uphill before. And I focused on the vitals, slowly squeezed off that arrow. And he was quartering two very hard, and it was a freaking perfect shot. Took out the top of his heart, all of both lungs, and immediately you can hear him just sloshing up blood. He takes a few bounds, jumps, and falls. So he died in like 5 seconds. I got him falling into the grass on camera, and it was just the most amazing redemption that I could have had.
Oh man, I can bet. Like, that is an awesome, awesome way. Because not only, I mean, you have low after serious low to another low, but I like what you said is that you took everything you learned from those first two situations and it came into play on being able to kill that deer on that day. Yeah. Like, ranging things all the way in, understanding what's going to happen, like, understanding that the deer is going to circle back down around wind from you. And you allowed yourself, like, in a lot of ways, to take the time and not rush, where you're not putting
all the pressure in the world on yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, and in a lot of ways, that shows that the recovery and redemption started far earlier, because you had accepted, like, you're right, I am here, I'm going to have fun, and I'm going to do this because it's something that I want to do, not something that I have to do.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, I wasn't happy that I missed that first shot for whatever mm-hmm. reason I did, really. And again, it's because I couldn't judge range. I'd ranged the whole way in, but when he spooked, he circled downwind. So, like, there goes all of the ranging I did the entire way there, you know? So
yep.
I learned the importance of, one, being able to hold draw, because it allows you to draw earlier than you need to and then be selective on when you take that shot, because it's no pressure if you have to hold for another 20 seconds.
Absolutely.
And I learned to visualize those moments, every possibility of what might happen before they do, because if I didn't see him possibly circling downwind, I wouldn't have held. And those lessons paid off, and the buck I ended up killing in Wisconsin. I should say I killed one in Ohio, I watched it die in sight, and I killed one in Wisconsin, and I watched it die in sight. So I mm-hmm. made some adjustments, and in the one in Wisconsin, I had to hold draw for 2 minutes and 15 seconds.
Yeah, man, that's, if you guys haven't seen that video, make sure you go to Jacob's channel on YouTube. It'll be in the show notes at the bottom here, but it's, you have a running counter on there of how long you're holding that shot, which is just insanity. Like, it is absolute insanity.
Yeah. And I would emphasize, not everyone should draw for 2 minutes and 15 seconds to take a shot, but I've drawn for 3 minutes plus in practice before, and I usually draw until, like, I know what it feels like when my arm's about to fall off, mm-hmm. and I'm forced to downdraw, and I was not there yet. I was still a minute out from that, but I will tell you, I was not comfortable, but I was very comfortable making the shot. Like, my muscles were sore, but I had executed countless good shots on longer draws before, but mm-hmm. I think the lessons I take away from this is just preparation in the moment of the shot is going to be a lot mental. There's only so much you can do in practice, and all of it helps. As much as you can possibly think of, elevating your heart rate, holding as long as you can, different angles, mm-hmm. all those things, they help like crazy. But a lot of it's going to be mental, and a lot of it comes from the mental side of recovering if something goes wrong. And if you Absolutely. Can't do that, like, there's just no shot that you succeed in the first place.
No. And I'm glad you said that, because the space between your ears is going to be your biggest roadblock. And if you can't overcome that in situations like this, you're not going to be able to execute shots later on. And as we've talked about on here previously with other guests, it's like, those are things that stick with you and stay with you forever. Like, for some guys, I know guys who cannot, man, they draw back on a doe, and they cannot talk themselves to a calm moment to be able to put an arrow in it. And it's ruined hunting for them in a lot of ways, to the point where, you know, they can't do what they used to do. So, you know, I'm glad that you said that, you state that the mental side of this, mental training with this stuff, is just as important as the physical side of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I think I got some of that from wrestling, honestly. It just looks like such mm-hmm. a physical sport, but it's just full contact chess. And it's like,
yeah,
that's the way it is in the woods, man. Except instead of getting pinned, you're getting your ass whipped by a deer, and you just got to take your lumps and get back out there. And I think it's a valuable thing to hear someone else's pain and maybe gain from it before it ends up being you.
Absolutely, man. Well, Jacob, I appreciate you sitting down with me tonight and going over this, and I'm excited for people to listen to this. I'm excited for people to kind of look you up. Why don't you plug your stuff real quick sure. for us?
Yeah, thank you, man. It's an honor to be on here. Yeah, my channel is The Wild Calling. You can find me on YouTube, Wild Calling Outdoors on Instagram, The Wild Calling on Facebook. Instagram and Facebook, I'll just be giving you updates, little highlights of videos before they come out or after they come out. And then, YouTube is going to be the main hub for everything. You can see all three parts of my Nebraska trip. You can see the Ohio kill I got, and then the Wisconsin one that you're talking about as well.
Awesome. Awesome. I appreciate it, man. Well, guys, this has been the Mobile Hunter Podcast, the Anatomy of a Miss series.
My guest tonight has been Jacob Sklinner. I appreciate you sitting down with me tonight. And guys, if you have any questions, please, please, please do not hesitate to contact us on Facebook, Instagram, through email. We can be reached at our new, oh gosh, I forgot about this. We have new emails. So it is Richard Cates, C-A-T-E-S, at themobilehuntersexpo.com or Christopher Leppert at themobilehuntersexpo.com. And if you would, please give us a 5-star rating on all podcast platforms. It helps us out and helps you out because you get more great content like this. Guys, it's been great talking to you. Have a nice evening. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's podcast. The best way you can support the podcast is by sharing online and with your buddies at Deer Camp. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and leave us a 5-star review.